So, Wednesday, March the 8th this week marks International Women's Day, a tradition that dates back to at least 1909. As I prepared for our recognition of this important day, I initially wanted to get a number of women from the congregation involved to lead this service. It seemed the appropriate thing to do. But time got away from me, as it does, and soon it was too late to pass on that responsibility. Fortunately, the Canadian Unitarian Universalist Women's Association had prepared a huge packet of material to help ministers with this occasion. And the theme for March, being used by many Canadian UU congregations, is simplicity. And the packet was titled, "It's Simple, We Need Change Now." But the content of the package was anything but simple. The breadth of the issues related to International Women's Day covered topics from spousal abuse, to the role of women in politics, to pay equity, to cultural differences in the role of women around the world, to education for women, and so on and so on. I was boggled. I didn't know where to start and how to do this service. And then, last week in Halifax, Judge Gregory Lenihan found Cabby Bassam Al-Rawi not guilty of sexual assault. I'll be talking a little bit this morning about sexual assault, and I know that this may be painful for some people here listening. I know statistically that a number of you have been assaulted, that a number of you have suffered painful experiences. Experiences that transcend my personal experience. So I hope you find this meaningful and helpful. I had a choice of images that I could have put on the cover of the order of service today. There were lots of things about Women's Day, most of them flowers and ribbons and dancing ladies. I selected the image from 1918, the woman waving that red banner, because I think it captures the determination that I feel in the air today in Halifax, a determination for change related to women's rights. As a Unitarian Universalist minister, I'm called to exercise my prophetic voice to bring more love and more justice into the world. It's clear to me that I cannot separate International Women's Day from the injustice of the male-dominated perspectives on sex in our society as expressed in our courts. And it's time that we address this in our churches. Because the roots of a lot of these problems are religious and spiritual. We live in a culture that, like it or not, has deep roots in Judeo-Christian teachings. Again, like it or not, the most foundational books of our culture are from the Hebrew and Christian Bibles. In many ways, our Canadian culture has moved beyond these sources, but in equally profound ways, they shape our politics and our law today. In 1988, Bishop John Shelby Spahn wrote a book titled Living in Sin, A Bishop Rethinks Human Sexuality. I'd like to say a lot's changed since 1988. I think a lot of these issues that Bishop Spahn raised have only gotten more severe. I quote here from the introduction to that book. The introduction was written by Dr. Robert G. Lahita, an associate professor at Cornell University Medical College. He wrote, "Some people feel that the sexual aspects of human life should be left alone, despite or because of the fact that sex permeates life and influences every aspect of behavior, whether for good or for evil. Sex can be called at once the greatest gift to humanity and the greatest enigma of our lives. It's a gift in that it is a singular joy for all beings, and it's an enigma in its destructive potential for people and for human relationships. It's not surprising, therefore, that sex is one of the most difficult aspects of life and that the integration of sex and religion is especially difficult." Here ends the quote. I've long felt that our churches, including Unitarian Universalist churches, have failed to come to grips with this reality, despite, in our case, some valiant efforts and some disastrous experiments. As I've already mentioned, the influence of the Hebrew Bible in our Canadian culture can hardly be overstated. In his book, Bishop Spong writes, "There is no doubt about the fact that the Bible is biased against women. The only question is why." Pay attention now, because this is where Bible study gets interesting. Continuing from Spong's book, throughout the Hebrew Scriptures, and these scriptures were written over 1,000 years of time, throughout this time, there was an intense battle constantly being waged between the followers of Yahweh and the followers of other religious traditions, often called the Baal worship. Yahweh's principal rival was identified most frequently in the Bible by the name Baal. And Baal was a male consort of the female deity Asherah. The religion of Asherah Baal was a nature religion, a fertility cult tied to the cycles of the seasons and the fecundity of the soil and the womb. This goddess-god couple was worshipped in local shrines with explicitly sexual liturgies that included both male and female prostitutes. End of quote. Didn't get that in Bible study. The worshippers of Yahweh, our theological forebearers, had to work hard to overcome the indisputable attractions of the Asherah Baal alternative. And the struggle raged over centuries. And the effort to confine human sexuality within the patriarchal family-based structure ended up shaping our culture to this day. I have in the past suggested a UU Bible study group without generating much enthusiasm. Perhaps I should have started from this entertaining aspect of it. Unitarian Universalists have, in the past, tried to throw off the Puritan shackles of our historical roots, and we almost destroyed ourselves in the process. There was a period in the 1960s when some of our congregations were known primarily for their liberal sexual practices. When this involved youths, and particularly when this involved questionable, no despicable behavior by some clergy, we as a faith tradition almost lost our way entirely. I was at the now famous 196 Berry Street Lecture delivered by Reverend Gail Seavey at the Unitarian Universalist Ministers Conference in Columbus, Ohio last year, 2016. The reverberations of this lecture are still ongoing. I'm proud to say that this Berry Street Lecture series, delivered by UU ministers, it's the final event of the annual conference of Unitarian Universalist ministers from across the world, is the oldest lecture series in North America. Gail's talk, a long talk, it was over an hour, was titled, "If Our Secrets Define Us." And she was talking about how we were keeping secret what had happened in our church and what people knew about and what ministers knew about that we didn't talk about in polite company. She gave a historical context of clergy sexual misconduct in UU congregations, including the reluctance of UU ministers to criticize their colleagues. Remember, this brave minister, Gail Seavey, was speaking to a room full of UU ministers, some of whom were complicit in the problems that she outlined. Maybe just give you a flavor of the kind of things she was talking about, but there are a number of cases where ministers had serial relationships with members of the congregation. Sometimes they married them, sometimes they didn't. Married a member of the congregation, divorced a member of the congregation, married another member of the congregation. Hard to believe. She said, "I've seen smart people, good people, fail to understand the impact of sexual misconduct, how pervasive and systematic it is, not just among us, but throughout our culture. I'd like to be able to believe that the judge involved in this case here in Halifax was one of those smart people, good people, just fails to understand the impact of sexual misconduct." She said that for years, the system at the UUA and in many congregations has been to protect the privileged instead of the vulnerable. Protect the privileged instead of the vulnerable. Doesn't that sound familiar in Halifax today? Estimating that one-third to one-half of UU congregations in the U.S. have been affected by clergy and sexual misconduct within recent memory, CV described the psychological trauma to individuals and the severe damage to congregational health. She noted the problem isn't limited to male ministers. Facing this issue head-on, rather than concealing it, is not only the moral thing to do, but also results in healthier congregations and better denominations, CV said. Keeping secrets about the times we fall short of our ideals stops us from developing an ever more nuanced power analysis with others who have suffered from intersecting cultural secrets. And here ends the quote. I can tell you that as a church, we have learned from this experience, but we still have work to do. The Ministers Association now has a detailed code of conduct around what is referred to as personal romantic relationships. And I won't go into the details of it, but I can tell you that it is very detailed and very strict. So I tell you all of this to convey two things. Unitarian Universalist professional ministers are very much aware of the difficulties of integrating sex and religion. We're also very much aware of the importance of this work. If our religion is to be authentic and meaningful in our lives, and bring more truth and love and justice into the world. I believe that as a faith tradition, we are well placed to play a prophetic role in pointing the way toward, pointing the way forward in this regard. In our recognition of this challenge, the Unitarian Universalist Association, in conjunction with the United Church of Christ, which is the American equivalent of the United Church of Canada, they developed a comprehensive lifelong learning curriculum decades ago on human sexuality called Our Whole Lives, or OWL for short. And it's been updated and expanded over the years. Got a slide, I just wanted to... So there are a number of curricula from kindergarten, grade 1, through grades 4 and 6, 7 and 9, 10 and 12, young adults and adults. I have to think if we're ever going to teach this program, we should start with the adult classes. The board of this congregation received a grant from the West Foundation this year to provide training for our director of religious exploration with the goal that might offer this program in Halifax soon, not just for our congregation, but to the public. Our church has provided adult classes in the past. We've done this here decades ago. But that was a time before internet pornography, a time before sexting, a time before the sexual bullying that goes on with these technologies. It is needed now more than ever. Our society is struggling to adapt to the changing sexual reality around us, and hence Judge Gregory Lenham's decision on Wednesday when he found Bassam al-Rawi, the cabbie, not guilty. I'll spare you the graphic details that are now public knowledge. The judge thought he was supporting his decision when he said, the prosecution had not proved that she didn't consent to sexual activity with him. I quote, she doesn't recall any of that because she was drunk. This does not mean, however, that an intoxicated person cannot give consent to sexual activity. Clearly, a drunk can consent. And that ruling came days after a jury in St. John's, Newfoundland, acquitted Police Constable Doug Snellgrove of sexually assaulting an inebriated woman that he drove home from a bar while on duty. The woman had gone to the policeman, afraid to take a cab home, trusting the police officer would take her home safely. He was acquitted by a jury. Nova Scotia's Justice Minister, Diane Wayland, said in response to all of this, that's why we have to work hard as a society, because government pronouncements alone don't make the difference. So on the day before International Women's Day, and on the day of International Women's Day, Tuesday and Wednesday of this coming week, there will be a public protest of the decision of Judge Lenham. Your minister intends to be there, and I know many of you will be there as well. May it be so.